This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello and welcome to By the Book with me, Sharmila Ganesan, and my fellow 2021 enthusiast, Lee Chui Lin.
Ooh, that's a strong right descriptor. Right out the gate. I don't know. I think you will see as our conversation progresses that neither of us are sure how we feel yet.
I felt like we should start on a high.
Okay, all right.
Happy New Year, everyone. It's our first show for 2021. I think we can all safely admit that we've been through quite a bit last year. Mm-hmm. So we don't know what's happening this year. We thought we'd kick things off with just the idea of fresh starts.
Yes, because, as Sharmila said, I think everybody's kind of ready to put 2020 well and truly behind us and at least try to begin on a clean slate. And that as a theme is something that books and short stories have traditionally really enjoyed. I think that what we're going to do for the course of the show is recommend books as we do, but also I think talk about the different types of ways that stories embrace this idea of a fresh start, because New Year's are one, that's why we're doing it. But above and beyond that, I think there's also moving somewhere and starting afresh. There's also the emotional fresh start that can come from a breakup or divorce. Mm-hmm. There's so many different ways of understanding the term.
So I did think when we were planning this show, it struck me that in a weird way, almost all fiction novels involve some kind of a fresh start. I mean, when you look at your classic story structure, the idea of something changing, something fundamentally pushing you in a certain direction. That's what all stories are. So in some sense, this might be a bit of a cheat, because you can argue that almost all books in some way or other could be about, well, all fiction books anyway, could in some way or another be about fresh starts. So I kind of like this idea of imagining different ways in which people find a way to reimagine what life can be, I think.
So let's start with perhaps one of the more obvious ones, right? Which is what happens when people uproot themselves and leave to start somewhere new, because that is something that we see over and over again. I think, in fact, I just wanted to touch on this book because we've spoken about it extensively. But last year, we reviewed the book. We also spoke with its author, The Wandering, which is by Intan Paramadita. And that one's a fun one if you're looking for a way to embrace the idea of a fresh start. And if you haven't found your way to the book yet, because it, of course, is a choose your own adventure, which means that as a character, you die. And then you sometimes have to respawn or restart.
And so multiple fresh starts.
Correct. All contained within one book. And I think the best thing about it is also that it's multiple fresh starts which offer, as they do, multiple possibilities for storytelling. And that is something that the book does. And that's also something that the structure allows. Not all books, admittedly, have so playful a format.
Mm. So that idea of being uprooted or moving or sort of life as you know it being changed is something that happens a lot, I find, in children's books, in teen books, primarily because it becomes a catalyst for some kind of change. Everything from Harry Potter to Anne of Green Gables. I think for children to develop in some way, it requires them to kind of leave behind what they've known. I find one of the books that I tend to think about a lot in this sense is actually this book called Charmed Life by Diana Wynne Jones, where a brother and sister pair lose their parents and then are adopted into the family of a wildly powerful enchanter. And the rest of the story kind of unfolds with them growing up in a completely different life where they feel very alone. But in some ways, it's a fresh start that they don't realize is going to be hugely transformative for the both of them. And I think stories like these resonate with the readers in a way, because that becomes a metaphor for a feeling that we, I think, feel in many ways. When you go into a new job, when you move to a new location, when you leave behind a family. And I think there's something quite cathartic about reading this on the page.
Charmed Life, the Crestomancy series. Cat Chant admired his elder sister, Gwendolyn. She was a witch. He admired her and he clung to her. Great changes came about in their lives and left him no one else to cling to. The first great change came about when their parents took them out for a day trip down the river in a paddle steamer. They set out in great style, Gwendolyn and her mother in white dresses with ribbons, Cat and his father in prickly blue serge Sunday suits. It was hot. It was a hot day. The steamer was...
No, for sure, cathartic is one thing, but another is... So I don't know if you've heard the term social stories.
Oh, no, I haven't.
So my sister actually works with differently abled children as well as adults. And something that comes up with development, for example, is this idea of the social story. Mm-hmm. So it's something that you use to help people who might be feeling a certain degree of anxiety about whatever it may be, whether it's going for going to a new school, whether it's going for a meeting, whether it's getting on a plane, if something like that is difficult for you. And so what a social story is basically all the things that you can expect laid out, whether in pictorial form or in written form. And it's something that you can do for yourself. So it's, I will get on the plane. It's very likely that someone will greet me. It's very likely that I will then. And so what it does is it allows you not catharsis, but anticipation. And so I think that when you finally do go through whatever it is that you were worried about, you then have that sense of, ah, okay, this is what's going to happen. And I bring this up because I think books like what you've just described, which have people going to new schools, you know, making new friends, in their own way, they are social stories. And that's also the benefit of it for children, right? To have them feeling a little more secure when they're doing something new.
Yes, I like that idea of finding some kind of security through difficult or challenging times through books. And I think people do this even though they may not necessarily realize they're doing it sometimes. But I think it can be, it can feel almost instructive to read about these things in a book versus maybe talking about it with someone is a little bit more active in some way. Mm-hmm. But a book allows you to kind of be in a meditative state almost.
So you mentioned fiction, and I wanted to just touch on nonfiction and how it can do that, because in the same vein about migration, about family, about different anxieties that can inform that, Frank McCourt wrote a trio of memoirs, beginning with Angela's Ashes, which detailed his childhood growing up in Brooklyn as well as in Limerick in Ireland. So it's Angela's Ashes, followed by Tis, which is his life as an adult, and ending with Teacher Man. And in each of those books, even though they are telling the story of a life, they are also telling the story of how a family rebuilds itself, how moving from one place to another, how trying to move away from poverty is in and of itself a fresh start. It's difficult to get there, but I don't think I'm recommending anything new here, in the sense that a lot of people are familiar with these books. They're lyrical, they're beautiful, they're easy to read, and they're kind of heartbreaking.
Angela's Ashes is about what?
It's about the time periods, the Depression, beginning the Great Economic Depression in the United States, where my mother and father met, and they had me, and then they had my brother Maliki. There was a succession of children, 6 children in 5.5 years, which is monstrous.
One set of twins,
yeah. The little girl died in Brooklyn, and my mother fell apart. My father was drinking, so we went back to Ireland, to Limerick, which was a ridiculous decision. To go from the frying pan into the fire, to go to Limerick of all places, which was, it never knew anything but depression.
Yeah, Brooklyn was tough.
Limerick was beyond the beyond. Limerick was the outer depths of the of Calcutta, except Calcutta at least is warm and dry. So my mother had twins, and the twins died the year we arrived in Limerick. The twins died, one in May and one in November.
So that's 3 dead.
That's
so
3
far.
Dead. And another one about to be born. In 10 years, from 1930 to 1940, she had 7 children and lost 3. In the meantime, my father's drinking. An occasional job, compounded by the fact that he came from the north of Ireland, so that he was an outsider. He was always an outsider, and it was very hard for him to get a job. With the result, between the drinking and the difficulty of getting a job, we sank lower and lower and lower in the economic scale.
And when he got a job, he spent the paycheck at the local bartender. Yeah.
He would last for 3 weeks, maybe, and be a good boy. But then the third Friday night, he always fell apart and he had to go to the pub.
I was just thinking of Tuesdays with Maury by Mitch Albom. You know, it's a book that's gotten a little twee now, I think, because of the whole album franchise.
It suffers from the Life of Pi problem in that it's a good book to begin with, but then it's subsequently become incredibly commercialized.
Yeah, but there is something to be said for this idea of a new beginning or a fresh start emerging from someone else's story. So in the case of Tuesdays with Maury, the focal point is someone revisiting his old teacher and sort of visiting him every week, every Tuesday, to reminisce and to accompany him as he's in his last stages of life. But by that process, the main character then becomes transformed in some way. So they achieve a sort of fresh start through the experiences of someone else. And I think that's something that is often played out in many books, in that whole relationship between a sort of a mentor character and a younger person.
We've been quite light so far. I think after this, we'll probably get into the psychodrama of it all, because that is a whole subcategory of this. I think we were trying to be optimistic, but as these shows usually tend to do, we're going to dip in and out. Mm. So maybe that's something, just warning you, just offering a social story, something you can expect.
Well, on that note, it is time for us to take a break, but let us know, it is 2021. What are the books that you think, come to mind when you think of fresh starts? What are the books you reach for when you're in need of, some kind of support when you're going through huge changes? Let us know. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Buy the Book with Sharmila and Lynn. And in honor of this being our very first show of 2021, we are talking about fresh starts because, well, it is time, I think, we put 2020 behind us as much as possible.
There are times to be literal-minded, and I think this is one of them.
That is true. One better place than a books show. So we've been talking about books that explore the idea of fresh starts in one way or another, and just the sort of different themes or ways in which books choose to do this. And one way that I realize much of literature tends to do is that sort of personal shift, someone trying to be a better person. And there are so many stories that you can point to that do this, but I was going to suggest, I hope, a graphic novel that I think many people may not have heard about, but is definitely one of my favorite ones, and that's called The Now of Brown by Glyn Dillon. That's N-A-O, that's the name of the character. And it's a story of a half Japanese, half English girl who has severe obsessive compulsive disorder, and so she suffers from sort of violent urges in her head to harm other people. However, she wants to become an artist. She's a very good artist, but her condition prevents her from fully realizing these dreams. So the entire graphic novel is that journey of how she tries to grapple with who she is and who she wants to be. And it's beautiful. It looks beautiful, but it's also sad and funny sometimes, but also extremely real. I would highly recommend it for people who are struggling with this notion of, who I suppose are dealing with maybe things that you can't change about yourself, but you also want to become something.
That's lovely. That sounds, I don't want to say self-helpy, but I just really enjoy it when books tackle issues that are difficult to talk about in thoughtful ways that aren't your, I suppose, your after-school special kind of way. Yeah. And that definitely doesn't sound like it. In line with that, one book that tends to come up when people think about fresh starts is, and I'm not going to dwell on it for long because it's one of my favorite books, but I also really hate talking about it, and it's Off Human Bondage by W. Somerset Maugham. Yeah. So I love the book. It is one of those books that swallowed me whole, and I thought about it for literally months afterwards. From time to time, I would be revisited by the specters of the characters. But it is, I'm not going to lie, an incredibly difficult book about a relationship that is unhealthy in every which direction.
Depicted well in its title.
Yes, yes, that's exactly right. But in each instance, similar to, I guess, what we spoke about with Frank McCourt, the character of Philip Carey has all these classic fresh start moments in that, you know, he's sent off to school. He is then making his way into the city as a student, as a medical student, and then later as a doctor. You know, all these moments, these key moments of growth that are always thwarted by this relationship that he has with a waitress named Mildred, who... they are bound together, they love each other, they hate each other. I promised a psychodrama, so here it is. But it is a book, I think, that talks about how fresh starts aren't always what they're cracked up to be. That you can gear up for it, you can prepare for it. I'm hoping 2021 isn't like this, but you can do all these things and yet the path to true growth is not straightforward.
Well, now that we're at the darker portion of our show.
Sorry.
Well, no, because, you know, I had one on my list. I might as well bring it up now. It is possibly one of the most simultaneously beautiful and heartbreaking books I've read in the last 10 years or so. It's a book called The Enchanted by Renee Denfeld.
I press my face against the crumbling wall. The soft rocks absorb their voices, but I have learned how to listen. I pick their words off the moss and stone. He is warning her that this case, above all others, will be tough. Ready and prepared, I hear him say. Soon? The lady asks. I can hear the pleading in her voice. How can he not hear it? But he doesn't. He is too busy being scared of her. The fallen priest doesn't hear the whipping in his own voice when he talks to the lady. He doesn't hear the longing and desire. He doesn't feel the wonderful wildness of the world. Though he lives inside this enchanted place, he doesn't see the enchantment in the lady. He doesn't see the enchantment in here or anywhere. For me, being taken to this dungeon was like landing in sanctuary. For the priest, it was worse than exile.
It's very interesting because if you're a lover of fantasy, if you're a lover of that sort of writing, it marries stark reality with the fantasy element. So it's set in a death row, it's set literally in the death row of a prison, where there's one particular unnamed prisoner who has just been there for years and years and copes with being there by imagining the various sounds that he hears, you know, under his prison, outside, as being elements of a fantasy story. Mm. But at the same time, there are all of these other characters around the prison, one of whom is a human rights defender who essentially tries to get some of these men off death row if she can, as well as a priest who is a fallen priest. So he's been defrocked, I think the term is.
Yes.
And so it represents fresh starts for many people in many ways, including the inmate himself, who I think very tragically, and I don't want to give away what the story is, for him, sometimes the fresh start may actually be an ending from the way he sees the world. And so it's very sad, but it's also just a great read. Not an easy read, but if you're looking for catharsis, I think it would be a good way to start the year.
I think we're just throwing out recommendations at this point, but Life After Life by Kate Atkinson mm-hmm. is a book that I've spoken about before, and in a similar spirit to The Wandering by Intan Paramedita, except without the element of choice, it also has a character, Ursula Todd, who basically dies and respawns. It happens over and over again, and in each instance you see her make decisions, you see her go down certain paths, you see sometimes these paths go on for longer than you'd like, you know, where you think, Ursula, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And in each moment, there is the opportunity for a start until there isn't one anymore. And I think it's just a really beautiful way of telling a story and about exploring the different branches of a person's life and also of accepting that ultimately your life is what you make of it. And so in that same vein, right, of... it's about fresh starts, but it's also about endings. Mm-hmm. If you're in the mood for it, it's a beautiful read. I've talked about it before, Kate Atkinson's Life After Life.
So I wanted to bring up in this idea of the different kinds of fresh starts that we see in literature, I find that female characters, more significantly than men sometimes, often have this opportunity to reinvent themselves, to leave behind particular kinds of expectations. And I must say that I enjoy those kinds of books very much. I mean, personally, obviously, it'll obviously resonate with me. One book that we have talked about before, we interviewed the author, in fact, is Delayed Rays of a Star by Amanda Lee Coe, because it's a book that allows so much space for women to reinvent themselves. For better or for worse, primarily follows the lives of three very well-known women in Hollywood, in film, basically, through different eras. Their paths cross and then diverge, but it's all about this idea of change. Change is constant. The reinvention, sometimes through their own control, sometimes not, is also constant. I wouldn't say it's a happy book, but it's a book that feels very satisfying.
That is exactly the word. We have fawned over this book now for 2 years.
Yes.
And I think it says something that we're still so struck by it, because I can still see images in my mind that are scenes from the book, mm-hmm. because they're so well drawn out. So aside from all the reasons that you just enumerated about why it's great, it's also just a story well told. While I'm still on a classic kick, I wanted to talk about an author that we're actually going to be diving into in full in one of our bibliography episodes next month, I believe. And that is one of the great novelists, Charles Dickens, and his specific novel, actually both Great Expectations and Oliver Twist, really capture this idea of fresh starts in different ways. So we've spoken about the idea of families or making a family, and that is something that both books explore, with central characters who are lost and who are somewhat unmoored from so many different elements of society in their own time and forced to make their own way over and over again. And both Oliver Twist and Pip, I think, do that time and time again. Great Expectations, I will hear nothing bad said of it ever. I think it's just one of the best books.
Great Expectations by Charles Dickens. Chapter 1. My father's family name being Pirrup, and my Christian name Philip, my infant tongue could make of both names nothing longer or more explicit than Pip. So I called myself Pip, and came to be called Pip. I give Pirrup as my father's family name, on the authority of his tombstone and my sister, Mrs. Jo Gargery, who married a blacksmith. As I never saw my father or my mother, and never saw any likeness of either of them, for their days were long before the days of photographs. My first fancies regarding what they were like were unreasonably derived from their tombstones.
Great Expectations is one of my favourite novels ever. I would argue, though, that I think Dickens actually does fresh starts in almost all of his books in some way or the other, whether it's Christmas Carol and offering some kind of redemption for the miserliness, David Copperfield and this idea of reinventing himself as a gentleman. There's just so much. I think there are certain writers that thrive on that. And to go back to that original point I made, perhaps most stories actually play in this field as well. But Dickens in particular, I think, does very well in capturing that change.
And his change often have to do with social mobility, right? Which I think is also a product of, if you view it through a historical lens, the times in which they lived, in which the structures of society were a lot more rigid. You're a gentleman or you're not. You're a working person. You know, there are all these different strata to society. And when you move from one to the other, it's very distinct. And it comes with a permanent change of sorts in your behavior, in your demeanor. And he does capture those nuances really well.
I wanted to very quickly just compare that whole thing that you just said to Arvind Adiga's White Tiger. As long as we're throwing out recommendations, if you're talking about social mobility, fresh starts, the story of a lower caste man in India, practically Dickensian in its description, sort of forcing his way through the barriers and, you know, very ruthlessly, which is not quite Dickensian, maybe. I think is a great story, a great readable, exciting story about the idea of making a fresh start for yourself.
So we started off by saying that there are so many different versions, and I think we should be honest. Shall we be honest?
The one version we wanted to talk about but couldn't.
Two versions. So one is, I am so sure, we didn't sufficiently touch on the idea of a midlife crisis as an impetus for a change and a start. And I think that's because of human bondage aside, we're trying to keep the show relatively light, relatively optimistic. But actually, that is a huge thing, right? Like, it's a huge genre. It plays in terms of drama, romance, and comedy. There are so many things about people in the middle of their lives just deciding for whatever reason, not just to buy a motorcycle, mm-hmm. but, you know, to move to another country and, I don't know, start a detective agency.
Yeah, or leave civilization behind.
Exactly. So there are so many different takes on that that I do feel we didn't sufficiently cover. But for some reason...
Well, I'm pipping for a better researched full show on midlife crises at some point.
Excellent.
There we go.
Excellent.
And the other one is what we've decided to term the woman who decided to become a spy genre.
Well, not just woman, but I think just there's so many stories where people have to assume secret identities, fake their own deaths. And I don't know, maybe it's just been a while since I've read Ian Fleming and the like, you know, a good old fashioned spy novel. If you have recommendations, send them our way. I suddenly find myself craving one because I can't think of one that I've read recently.
Yes, absolutely. Let us know whether in those genres or any other books that you think deal with the idea of fresh starts, new beginnings. Let us know. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. To footnotes, and of course it is January, it's our first show of the year, so we thought we'd close off this discussion on new beginnings with a little bit of discussion on our own resolutions, specifically our reading resolutions. We made some last year to varying degrees of success. I think we did well with the diversity ones, but not so well with the nonfiction one.
But
I blame 2020 for that.
We didn't do well with nonfiction at all.
Well, we read Humankind, which we both really liked. I feel like that was the high point of Sharmila, the nonfictionness.
Sharmila, we must not set these standards for ourselves. It was one book.
But this year, nevertheless, we're going to soldier on and declare some resolutions for ourselves. One of mine is one that I'm going to kind of co-opt from our previous show, where you talked about how you document the books you read. And I think I'd really like to do that. I think I'd like to start not just documenting the books I read as a matter of record, but also my thoughts on them. One, because it's hugely useful to do shows like these, but also just because I think it helps me feel more engaged with what I'm reading.
Honestly, it saddens me when I look at books that are on my shelves that I know I've read that I now have no memory of. And I think that it is not an experience unique to either of us. I think many, many people who read often, who've been reading for years, who have had some books for mm-hmm. like decades in their homes, it's natural that you might not remember. I don't think every book is going to be a standout, but having at least just a little written, affecting and sad, you know, helps you remember exactly what it was that, if not the story told, how you felt reading the story. So I would highly recommend. Do you know how you're going to do it?
Well, I like the idea of using one of my numerous notebooks that I have not written in and handwriting it. I like the idea of handwriting rather than I thought of an Excel spreadsheet, but it felt a little impersonal. So definitely something handwritten.
Mine is, I have a very vague one to start off with and a very specific one. So the vague one is just to read more. I read a fair amount this year and I kind of want to keep that going, assuming that this year becomes more socially active than 2020 was. I would like to keep this habit of reading more often, reading larger books going. I would also like to read more graphic novels. I think that that's a little bit of a hole in my reading habits. But the firmer thing, the thing that has a KPI, a deliverable attached to it, is I would like to take some time and organize my bookshelves in full and keep them that way.
That is a lofty goal.
Yeah.
But also fun. It's fun, but it's the kind of thing that you keep putting off, at least for me.
Yes. It's also physically tiring mm-hmm. because, you know, just having to take everything down, put it back up. I can tell you now that I'm not going to do it by color. I don't see the value in it. I refuse to ever, you know, I will not do it. But I've yet to figure out exactly what my system is going to be. I've done alphabetical in the past. It didn't really serve. So I'm thinking about breaking it down more specifically to genre and dedicating different shelves to it.
I'm very nervous about breaking away from the alphabetical system, although I want to, because I agree, it doesn't always work. It only works when I really remember the author's name. Otherwise, I'm just kind of peering at the shelf going, I think his name started with G. But I can't yet figure out what I'd like to do.
Yeah, so I'm planning to do some research. I'm giving myself time. It's not like it's January and now I have to do it. But I want to ensure that my bookshelves continue to work for me. You know, next year, 5 years from now, when I've bought more books and I've added them to the shelves, they still need to work. Because I last organized it, I would say 5 years ago now, and they have, I think, as many of us do, increasingly grown messy. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, what I'm thinking is, no colors, firstly, but also perhaps more of a system of organizing it according to genre, perhaps even keeping a logbook attached to my bookshelves that I log books in so that I know what's there and what I have and what I've loaned out. So
I love how I think I'm sounding a little nerdy and then you top it and I feel so safe.
Yeah, logbook. I'm sorry. But that's where my head currently is. And that is my resolution. I want to get this done by, I want to say June, you know, to be able to have a bookshelf that is functional.
So to add to a resolution that's tied to what we do on the show, one of the things I found to be quite rewarding ever since we introduced it is our bibliography segments. We didn't start it at the beginning of last year. It's sort of last quarter, I think, was when we sort of started getting into it. I've found it a great way to revisit authors and kind of plug the holes in some way. George Orwell or Agatha Christie, you know, they're works that they've written that these are authors I love, but I may not have necessarily read everything they've written, or I read many of them when I was very young. And I really like the idea of sort of revisiting and at least reading one or two of their works in preparation for our shows. So one of my resolutions is to be sort of very active about doing that.
That's going to be lovely.
So we've been talking about our reading resolutions. Let us know what yours might be, as wild or as simple as they are. We'd like to hear them. Tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.